And good morning. It is 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves, and joining me on the phone lines right now is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, who joins me. And Mr. Crawford, good morning. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Hey, good to be with you.
First of all, I wanted to ask you about flood prevention in Arkansas. On Friday, you released a press statement, also along with Senator John Bozeman, about $7.6 million in USDA funding coming to the state for flood prevention efforts. Can you tell us about that, please?
Well, if you think about what we've dealt with over the last, just this year, it seems like every year, every other year, we have a flooding event that is typically sort of related with what you might call a 100-year flood, or some might even call it a 500-year flood, but it's more likely a 2-year flood. I mean, it happens all the time. It happens frequently. And so while we have, we're abundantly blessed with water resources here in Arkansas, sometimes managing that, it's almost an embarrassment of riches, for lack of a better term. Sometimes managing it can be a challenge. And so we have so much of it at times, and the timing of it sometimes is, we can't control. But think about the flooding that took place in April this year along Black River, White River. I mean, it seemed like, and it just continued on into the year. But that's certainly not the only time. We had an unusual fall flood on Black River last year, the latter part of August, September. So late summer, early fall flooding that's very uncharacteristic. And so we have challenges in just trying to manage that. And we've got various watersheds throughout the district. One of them comes to mind, DePardee Creek over in Jackson County, that they've been dealing with this issue. We've got Cache River, the upper, the lower. We've got issues all up and down the district, and we need to be able to have some resources to help manage those floodwaters and make more productive use of it. Because the truth of the matter is, we can probably benefit from that if we can... if we have the resources to create structures to help manage it.
And how will the funding protect those areas? What will the money specifically be used for?
Well, not every watershed is the same, and so you'd have to look at each one individually and determine, what's the best course of action. I give you an example. The St. Francis has a great, well-run levee district, and it's performed very, very well. Black River, there's a levee district there that has statutory authority, but it's probably not broad enough. And so these resources would be able to allow them to construct over a broader area a levee there. And then we've got, for example, Cache River. A levee's probably not the best choice on Cache River, but we've got to be able to manage that water. And so there's possibly some containment structures that can be utilized or constructed, rather, so that they could utilize water later in the year as they collect it early in the year. They could be using it later, lifting off of those containment facility or structures to irrigate their crops and so on, instead of being inundated early on and then having to wait for that water to recede. And it's probably a similar scenario for DePardee Creek and some of the others. So it's just being able to look at each of these watersheds and irrigation districts and drainage districts on a case-by-case basis and saying, how do we do this sort of holistically and integrate a comprehensive plan among these watersheds.
Obviously, $7.6 million would not be enough. I mean, is it more like a starting point to be able to do this, something like this? Because it seems like it would take much more money to be able to continue working for ultimate flood control.
Well, and the $7.6 million, whatever the figure is, that's a lot of money. But in the big picture, it's really not when you think about how much work has to be done and the broad area that it has to be done in. It's a starting point, and it's something that we're going to have to deal with over time. But I think as much as anything, it's important to recognize that at least now we're seeing some resources directed to some of these areas.
Many in Jonesboro remember the May 24th, 2016 flooding when 6 inches of rain fell in 3 hours and flooded numerous homes. And there is an area called Big Bay. There was that large ditch that's over by the Poinsett County, Craighead County line that a lot of people have said that that's a huge problem. I know that's something the Army Corps of Engineers has been working on, and Jonesboro Mayor Harold Perrin has been having meetings with them about that. Any updates on that particular work when it comes to all those water drainage districts and what comes out of Jonesboro flowing south, working on the Big Bay Ditch? Any updates on that?
Well, not specifically, but it just sort of underscores the whole point of this comprehensive approach. With a lot of times what you see is people, make some adjustments to address their specific area or their portion of a drainage district or a watershed, and then it becomes a bigger problem downstream. And so that's why the city of Jonesboro is involved in Big Bay Ditch and some of the other projects, because we have, number one, a population center. Number two, we're upstream. And so it's not just as simple as we're going to address our problems and the rest of you can figure it out for yourselves. You really have to start at the bottom and move up so that you can make sure that everybody along that watershed is working together in concert so that you're not making the problem worse by one portion of that drainage area addressing their specific problem, and then people downstream actually are having their problems compounded because there wasn't a comprehensive, concerted effort to address it.
U.S. Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. As you know, President Trump has given Congress a deal on DACA that would include a 70-point plan that would include sweeping immigration law changes. Of course, the top priority is building a wall. What are your thoughts on his plan, and do you think that this is the right direction to go in with immigration reform?
Well, I tell you, I haven't seen all 70 points. I'm not sure who has. I haven't seen all 70, and obviously the first piece of that is building the wall. That's something he campaigned on. And, you know, from my perspective, if you're going to implement any meaningful immigration reform, it has to start with border security. I mean, we can't continue on without a secure border. And it's not just the United States that has this concern about their own borders. Mexico has the same concern on their southern border. And I have visited with diplomats from countries in Central and South America. And look, border security is not a uniquely American problem. It is a problem for every sovereign nation, and every sovereign nation is entitled to secure their own country. And so we need to take that into consideration. This is not a belligerent act on the part of the United States. We're not being punitive to Mexico by securing our border. And it's just, you've probably heard me say this before, I don't lock my door at night because I hate the people outside. I lock my door at night because I love the people inside. And so we have to take a proactive posture on securing our border. And if we don't do that, all the immigration and reform is really not going to amount to much.
Well, another key thing is one that switches immigration system from one that prioritizes family connections to one that's based on merit, almost right. Like a point system. What do you think about that?
Well, what you're describing there is the current scenario, which essentially enables and actually encourages chain migration from a family perspective. And so we need to break that cycle and start looking at a merit-based system, because the fact of the matter is, I do think that we need to secure our border, but I do think we also need to have some doors open, and those doors need to be clearly marked. Are you coming into the United States because you want to work? Are you a migrant worker? You're going to be here for 6 months, maybe, 10, 11 months, whatever, and then go back to your home country? That's perfectly fine. Come through this door. Are you coming through this door that you want to be a citizen, so I want to apply for a green card? Then yes, here's this door. And whatever door you come through needs to be clearly marked, and there needs to be a clear objective as to why you're entering the country. And we need to know you're in the country, because one of our bigger problems, not only illegal border crossings on the southern border, is visa overstays. And so those are going to be concerns in an immigration reform package as well. But, you know, what we're talking about when you talk about the merit system versus what amounts to a chain migration system, that needs to be fixed. And so people who want to enter the country legally and do it right, they're going to accrue points toward citizenship because they're acting in accordance with our laws, and they're not trying to skirt the system. Folks who basically ignore our rules and say, well, we're going to come in the country on our own terms, why should that be rewarded or validated? In fact, that's the problem with our system now, is that we do need to find an opportunity for folks. If they want to come here to work, that's fine. We've got bigger problems than worrying about whether we have a migrant workforce. The bigger problem is, culturally, we have too many people that don't want to work, and that creates the demand for a migrant workforce. So, this is all part and parcel of some things that we've got to change, from a societal level.
I know Democrats have problems with this, or some Republicans who may have some issues with this. What potential problems do you see from this legislation? Do you think this will pass?
Well, look, it's going to be difficult. We could pass it out of the House, I think, but it's going to be difficult simply because in the Senate, you know, for non-budgetary legislative action, there's the filibuster. And so you're going to require 60 votes to break that filibuster. If they decide they want to change that rule, which is a self-imposed rule, it's not a constitutional mandate, there's no statutory requirement for 60 votes, but if they want to change that, then they can. And then we have a possibility of being able to move legislation like this. But even with the 60-vote threshold removed, and you say we only need 50 plus one, that being the plus one being the vice president, you'd still have difficulty with a handful of Republicans that might stand in the way of this on the Senate side. In the House, we've got a similar dynamic, but the threshold is lower. We need 218 votes to be able to move anything legislatively. So there's no filibuster provision in there that prevents legislation from being moved. So the question is, really probably can the House or can the Senate kind of come to terms with the fact that the filibuster rule is an outdated, antiquated idea that, yes, it's there to protect the minority, but the previous majority holders didn't care anything about the minority, and they were perfectly willing to remove the filibuster when it suited them. And so apparently it's not set in stone if they're able to apply that filibuster rule selectively. So that's a major impediment to us being able to accomplish much in Congress, is that filibuster rule.
Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here. I want to start a conversation on tax reform, and we may have to carry this over into next month. But tax reform, I know, is another big thing, a big priority from the president. He wanted tax reform passed. It was one of the things that he ran on. Do you think that this issue of tax reform will happen this year?
Yeah, I think it really needs to. It's important for us to be able to move forward on this. And look, the main thing I want people to understand is simplifying a tax code that right now is punitive to economic growth. And also, it puts us at a competitive disadvantage in the global marketplace. So let's first talk about middle-income folks that are trying to, get to work on time, drop their kids off at school, making it to football practice and dance class and do all those kinds of things. Can we put $1,200, $1,500, $2,000 back in their pocket at the end of the year and let them spend it on what they need to? I hope so. And that's what we need to be leading on with tax reform, is how you put more money back in the pockets of working families. That's step one. So we've simplified the tax code from 7 brackets to 3, but there are really 5, and that is the 0% tax. So if you're, below $12,000 or filing jointly $24,000, you don't pay any taxes at all. That's a separate bracket that's really not being counted. And then the higher bracket, which would really amount to a 5th bracket, is for income above a certain level, so that, what we get accused of all the time is millionaires getting tax breaks. Well, this puts them in a bracket where they have an additional surcharge on their income, and that threshold is probably going to somewhere be in the $1 million range. I'm not sure. But what we really ought to be focusing on is simplification of the code, targeted relief to middle-income families, and then finally, look, we need to bring our corporate tax rate down and bring it in line with the rest of the world, because right now we are the highest corporate tax rate in the world. If we can bring that down to 20%, that's going to put us in a much more competitive footing to keep us from outsourcing jobs overseas and make American manufacturing much more of an economic juggernaut. And then we're going to see some real economic growth in this country.
We're going to have to stop it there, but we'll continue with this conversation on tax reform next time you join us next month. But that's U.S. Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you, Mr. Crawford.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. And, of course, that's U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. Now, you can listen to these interviews back. Of course, we'll put them on our podcast as well. And you can also hear them anytime when you stream online at KASU.org. We'll go back to Morning Edition. For KASU News, I'm Jonathan Reed.